Good day, and welcome to today's teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, there will be an opportunity to ask questions during our Q&A session. I will now turn the program over to Rebecca Jeske. Please go ahead.
Hello, this is Rebecca Jeske. I'm the media coordinator for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. We're here to talk about Juul v. NSA, which was filed this morning. We have here EFF Senior Staff Attorney Kevin Bankston and EFF Legal Director Cindy Cohn. We're going to start with a short statement from Kevin and then open it up to Q&A. If you have any questions after this call, feel free to contact me anytime at rebecca@eff.org or at 415-436-9333, extension 125. Kevin, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for calling in. Again, I'm Kevin Bankston. I'm a senior staff attorney here at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And I'm here today to announce a new lawsuit, Juul v. NSA, where we are suing the government and government officials, including President Bush and Vice President Cheney, to end the National Security Agency's years of illegal spying on millions of ordinary Americans and to hold accountable those responsible for it. As you likely know, EFF already represents AT&T customers in the class action case Hepting v. AT&T. We brought that case against AT&T in 2006, seeking to halt its participation in this massive program of illegal dragnet surveillance, first authorized in 2001 by the President and implemented by the NSA. Today, we've opened a second front in our battle to stop the NSA's illegal surveillance of millions of ordinary Americans. On behalf of our four named plaintiffs in Hepting and one additional AT&T customer, we have today filed a complaint called Juul v. NSA. That complaint is or will shortly be available on our website. Just go to EFF.org and click through the graphic regarding the case. In addition to suing the government directly, including the NSA and the Department of Justice, we're also suing the President, Vice President Cheney, and his Chief of Staff, David Addington, as well as the individual attorneys general, NSA directors, and directors of national intelligence who have authorized and implemented this program. The suit alleges that the spying violates the U.S. Constitution, as well as a broad range of federal privacy statutes, including the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Wiretap Act, and the Stored Communications Act. The plaintiffs in Juul v. NSA are representing a nationwide class of all AT&T residential phone and Internet service subscribers, seeking a declaration that the program of surveillance is illegal and an injunction to end it. Their main goal, as in Hepting, is to dismantle the nationwide NSA spying network and to stop the government from vacuuming up their private communications and records. They are also demanding that the government account for and destroy all the copies of their and the class members' phone calls and emails and other information that the NSA has illegally collected from AT&T's domestic networks and records databases. Our individual plaintiffs are also seeking damages against the government and individual government officials, except for the President, who the courts have found is absolutely immune from civil damages claims for conduct in office. The plaintiffs are doing this to ensure that the legality of the surveillance can be fully litigated, to obtain personal accountability from the architects of the program, and to provide a strong incentive against future lawbreaking by these or other government officials. Our lawsuit today should sound a clear warning to future occupants of the White House, as well as future heads of the DOJ and NSA. If you break the law and violate Americans' privacy, there will be consequences. Now, we initially sued AT&T in 2006, because we thought that suing them would be the fastest way to uproot this illegal nationwide spying network. However, this summer, Congress passed, as part of the FISA Amendments Act, a law purporting to grant immunity to AT&T and others who illegally assisted the government in its massive spying program. We think that that immunity statute is flatly unconstitutional, as Cindy can explain during questions if you like, and we are confident that the courts will agree. However, litigating that question is going to slow us down on our way to our main goal, getting a ruling on the legality of the surveillance, getting an injunction to stop it, and ensuring against future illegal surveillance by obtaining accountability from those who participated in it. Those are the goals of this case, Juul v. NSA, and I look forward to your questions about it.
All right, do we have any questions?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, press star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll take just a second to let the questions queue. And our first question comes from Julian Sanchez of Ars Technica.
Yeah, I noticed in the complaint here you have a variety of officials and then DOE's 1 through 100 inclusive. Who are those defendants?
If we knew who those people were, they would not be named as John Doe's.
Or I guess, what are they in the abstract?
These are other government officials who participated in, counseled, or ordered the NSA spying, people whose identities we expect would be uncovered in discovery in this case. This is simply us ensuring that we are covering all the bases in terms of the people responsible for this illegal spying.
Our next question comes from Julia Cheever of Bay City News.
Hello. Doesn't the FISA amendment of last summer provide for surveillance to be supervised and authorized by the FISA court? And if so, how can you, on what basis are you claiming that there is ongoing illegal surveillance?
I'm glad you asked that question. The FISA Amendments Act that passed this summer was described by the administration and written in a manner that it addressed the targeting of people outside of the United States for surveillance, whether surveillance of international communications or foreign communications. It says nothing about authorizing any domestic surveillance. Our case is about the interception of millions of ordinary Americans' domestic communications, and there is no indication that the FISA Amendments Act authorizes or was intended to authorize this conduct. If the government is proceeding under the purported authority of the FISA Amendments Act, then the administration has perpetrated an incredible fraud on both Congress and the American public in describing that law as limited to targeting people outside of the United States. And if they are illegally using that statute to conduct the surveillance we allege, we hope and expect that that would come out in this lawsuit, and we could challenge their conclusion that they may do this under that statute, which we think is plainly incorrect.
I have a second question.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you expect this case to be transferred to Judge Walker along with the other cases?
That is most likely. We are filing a notice of related case indicating that this shares legal and factual issues with the other cases in the multi-district litigation before Judge Walker. We can't say for certain that it will end up in that proceeding, but that is certainly likely.
Thank you.
And we will take our next question from Glenn Chapman of AFP.
Oh, hi, Kevin. Hi, Cindy, Jessica.
Hi, Glenn.
Just trying to understand, you say this is going to, you know, the act passed this summer will slow things down. Since the legal process is going to restart and the U.S. government is going to reassert the same or similar defenses that they've been asserting all along, how is this really going to be distinctly different and or any faster?
Well, I mean, the main reason this will be faster is that we will not have to litigate the issue of immunity. Obviously, the immunity for telecoms did not apply to government or government officials, which was actually one of the reasons, one of the things that was used to justify its passage. So we are taking up the pro-immunity people's suggestion and going after the government and the government officials behind this program. Certainly, we expect the government will raise objections to this case based on the doctrine of state secrets. However, since we brought AT&T, we have obtained, and others in other cases have obtained, a number of positive rulings on that would indicate we are likely to be successful in overcoming any motion to dismiss based on state secret.
And how much the appeal that's going on, I mean, the constitutional challenge to the act this summer, how much does the fate of both cases, this one and the older case, rest on the success of that challenge?
I'm not certain I understand which cases you're speaking of.
The survival of Hepting, to my understanding, and please straighten me out, depends on successfully challenging constitutionality of the act passed this summer.
Yes, sir.
So why does the fate of this new filing also rest on that same challenge?
No, those are two separate issues. What we are challenging in Hepting is the constitutionality of the immunity that the government is attempting to apply in our case. And so that is a separate issue from the substantive surveillance provisions of that law. So this case is not related to that issue in the issue of immunity in any way. And our progress in this case will not be hinged on how we do in challenging the immunity in Hepting.
Okay. So yeah,
they're simply unrelated issues.
Okay, so that's pretty simple. So the act this summer, this new filing is crafted so that it's sort of it's immune from that act in a way.
The immunity does not never was intended to cover the government, and so it's simply irrelevant to our suit against the government and its officials.
Excellent. And this has been filed today in which court?
Northern District of California. The federal court in the Northern District of California.
Excellent. Any specifying damages or no?
No, we have referenced the statutes that provide for damages in the complaint.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Joyce Cutler of BNA.
Hi, question for you. Why file a new suit? Why not just amend the Hepting suit? And also, specifically, you know, in the FISA amendments, I guess, where are you trying to fit this in? So it doesn't escape the restrictions.
Okay. Well, why we are not amending Hepting is because in Hepting we are currently litigating over whether, or will shortly be litigating over whether the immunity is constitutional, which would delay us getting to the issues that we are most focused on, which is getting a ruling on the legality of the surveillance and getting an injunction to stop it. By bringing this new suit, we avoid the immunity delay as we seek those things.
Okay. And under the lawsuit, and I haven't read the lawsuit yet, how do you just clarify again? How do you think you're going to escape the new FISA restrictions?
The new FISA you mean the new FISA surveillance authorities under the FISA Amendments Act?
Yes.
As I was discussing earlier, we do not think that statute authorizes the conduct we allege, which is interception of domestic communications. That law was targeted at allowing surveillance targeted at people outside of the country. There was never been any indication that it was intended to allow what we allege, and if it is being used for that, then a great fraud has been perpetrated on Congress and the public because the administration sold that law as helping them get at people outside the United States, not to authorize them to spy on Americans. Now, if the government is proceeding under that law incorrectly and illegally, that is something that hopefully will come out in this lawsuit, and we can argue with, and I think win the argument, that the FISA Amendments Act doesn't allow this.
Okay, the people who are the plaintiffs, how do they have standing? Do they know for sure that their communications had been intercepted? A little bit about who they are.
Yes, all of our customers are simple, normal Americans, AT&T customers, who use the AT&T internet and phone services. Our evidence is provided not only by widespread news reports that have consistently shown the NSA has tapped into key telecommunications facilities across the country and is vacuuming up millions upon millions of ordinary Americans' communications, but also by whistleblower evidence from AT&T technician Mark Klein, which demonstrates how exactly that is being done in AT&T's facility here in San Francisco. We allege a nationwide network of such NSA vacuum cleaner surveillance facilities that would indiscriminately collect the communications of all the people who use AT&T's networks, including our plaintiffs.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Nick Giuliano of rawstory.com.
Hi, Kevin. How are you? Thanks for taking the call today. I just wanted to make sure I'm clear here. It sounds like essentially the conduct you're alleging goes above and beyond essentially what the administration acknowledged back in early 06 as sort
absolutely.
Of the HIPAA surveillance program.
Absolutely. As both the Attorney General and the Director of National Intelligence have since admitted, the so-called terrorist surveillance program that the President admitted to, which involved the interception of international communications linked to al-Qaeda, is only one particular aspect of the surveillance activities that the President authorized. And again, based on widespread news reports and our own undisputed record evidence, the program is much broader and involves the massive acquisition of millions of people's communications in what can only be described as a vast phishing expedition through AT&T's networks and databases.
Okay. I'm also wondering if you could talk a little bit about the I'm not sure if you saw the articles in the Washington Post earlier this week on Sunday and Monday about Dick Cheney's office's involvement in the sort of March 04 showdown between Comey and Ashcroft and Gonzalez and Addington regarding the legal justification for this, and also if any of the changes that were reportedly made to the program following that that dispute, if there are any concerns with statute of limitations in terms of what happened between, you know, October of 01 and March of 04 and since then, and then since July with the passage of the amendments, and how you're sort of keeping these sort of separately justified programs straight within the context of the lawsuit.
That's a whole lot of questions piled on top of another. I'll start. Certainly, I did read the Washington Post. We are well aware of that story. I think it was, I think it primarily just confirmed what we already know, which is Vice President Cheney and his then legal counsel, Mr. Addington, were absolutely central to the creation and administration of this program. It also clarifies that the Department of Justice considered the program to be in violation of criminal law once it obtained more information about the program. We do not know what changes were made to accommodate the Department of Justice's concerns. However, we do not think those changes involved a change in the basic modus operandi of the program, which is the mass collection of communications and records data via backdoor access to telecommunications carriers such as AT&T's facilities.
And just one last thing, how long do you expect this case to go on before there's, you know, some sort of opinion from a judge one way or the other, even just from preliminary findings?
I mean, such things are really hard to predict. It depends very much on a judge's schedule. I mean, in the AT&T case, we brought the case in January. We had an opinion on the government's motion to dismiss based on state secrets by the summer. Hopefully we can move that quickly in this case as well, but rather than fighting over state secrets quite as much, we can actually fight over the root issues of whether this surveillance was legal.
All right, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll take our next question from Julian Sanchez of Ars Technica.
So if you'll forgive me if I – I may have actually pressed that twice, by the way. If I can get into the weeds just a touch. I talked about this with Cindy a bit the other day. As I understand it here, the domestic surveillance claim, that is the claim of mass acquisition, which I guess gets sort of tied up in a standing issue, relies on the premise that the initial – so then there's two definitions here that are kind of central, acquisition and targeting. So it seems like first, I mean, even to establish standing, you need it to be the case that acquisition includes the filtering through the Norris box of calls, whether or not they're ever fixed in a permanent format. And I know the government has argued in the past, and there may or may not be FISA rulings affirming this view, that in the context of stuff like Carnivore, these sort of ephemeral copies of data that are made for the purpose of passing them through a filter device are not an acquisition.
I'll stop you there. I know where you're going. I'd like to answer your question briefly, but to the extent you'd like to discuss that more, I'd be happy to address that later because I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this. I believe you are incorrect. There are not court cases holding what you just described, but...
No. I know that's the argument.
Okay. We have an enormous amount of authority indicating that the statutes and the Constitution prohibit exactly what the statutes say they prohibit, which is the acquisition by a device of communications. And that is what we are alleging here. To the extent the government intends to argue that it doesn't count as an interception unless NSA analysts actually read it or listen to it, well, first off, they haven't made that argument yet, although Verizon has in its case. But also, they simply lack support for that. That's not what the law says, and it's certainly not what the Constitution requires. The government is not supposed to have this information in the first place, and whether and how they handle it after it's been acquired is simply irrelevant to our claims.
Okay. And, I mean, I guess, well, then maybe that moots the second part of the question, but in terms of targeting, it seems that if you're going to argue, I mean, so one of the questions then is whether this exceeds the bounds of the FISA Amendments Act, and again, this will depend heavily on the answer to the first question, but it does seem like there may be some ambiguity in the definition of targeting, such that, for example, if there is some algorithm that they're using that is, you know, designed in such a way as to somehow pick up, you know, the conversations of members of groups believed to be operating overseas, it may happen to pick up a domestic communication, though in some sense targeted at, you know, Al-Qaeda based abroad, let's say.
If that's the argument they make, we will argue about that in front of the court. I think that reading of the law is flatly incorrect, and I think a reading of the word target that it allows the acquisition of millions of people's communications and records makes the word meaningless. It is not targeted surveillance if they're getting everything. But anyway, I'm happy to talk more about that issue further if you'd like.
And we'll take our next question from Glenn Chapman of AFP.
Okay, so I'm back. Thanks. Just really quick, do you see this lawsuit being expanded beyond AT&T to other providers? Obviously, there are a lot of cases bundled together before Walker at this point.
Well, this case is not against AT&T or any other carrier. This case is against the government and its officials. We currently have also our lawsuit against AT&T in front of Judge Walker. We do not have any, and there are plenty of other cases regarding other carriers. We are focused on AT&T, and we are focused on the government.
Okay. I guess you're right. I apologize. Do you see like broadening out the complainants to include the users of other carriers?
Our evidence is, to be clear, we do think that the surveillance being conducted on AT&T's network does implicate the privacy of people other than AT&T subscribers as well. But we have chosen to limit our class to AT&T customers.
And now back to the other side, how, if at all, would you or do you expect the potential legal defenses for Cheney et al. To change when they're no longer in office? Does that change anything, or they still maintain this retroactive kind of ability to invoke the same defenses they would be able to invoke were they in office?
I mean, I'm not quite sure how to answer
this. This is Cindy. To the extent that they're being sued in their official capacities, and some people are, then the new official will step into the official capacities role. But to the extent that they're being sued for their personal decision-making, that won't change when they leave office because they're being sued for what they, you know, the personal decisions that they made at the time. So, and defenses may change a little. There's definitely... you know, there are certain immunities that exist when you're in office that don't exist when you leave office. But I don't want to go chapter and verse. It gets a little complicated. So there will be some small shifts when they leave office, but overall they can still be held accountable for the decisions that they made while in office, even when they leave office. I hope that's clear.
Yeah, it is. I was wondering more about what their options of defense go. Do some walls fall down once they leave office that they can no longer stand behind? I guess.
Yeah, they do, and it's complicated. I guess is the way sovereign immunity works and is a complicated thing, and it turns on the particular statute. So, I have a chart. we have charts to try to do that, but we can do that on a press call. I'm afraid.
Yeah. I would add the point that to the extent the individual government officials claim that they are entitled to qualified immunity against our claims, we are very confident we will overcome that. AT&T, who we sued as acting as an agent of the government, claimed qualified immunity itself in its briefing before Judge Walker. And Judge Walker said they were not entitled to such immunity because they had violated a clearly established right, which is the standard for that kind of immunity, concluding that that AT&T could not seriously contend that a reasonable entity in its position could have believed that the alleged domestic dragnet was legal. So
we think the same is true about the governmental officials.
Excellent. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Leslie Cantu of Communications Daily.
Hi. You touched on this briefly before, but I just wanted to make sure that I understand. What current evidence do you have showing that the surveillance is ongoing?
Well, we have continuing news reports indicating that the surveillance we've uncovered via our whistleblower evidence is continuing. Just for example, a story in March from the Wall Street Journal that noted our evidence and then cited current and former intelligence officials as confirming a nationwide network of such surveillance hubs.
It's still in March of 08, still picking up communications. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
It appears we have no further questions at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you all for taking the time to speak with us, and have a nice day.